Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony. You're in for a great show today. Earlier on in the day, I caught up with a man who needs no introduction. I'm sure most of you know who he is and have listened to him before. If you're like me, you love listening to him because he's such a wealth of information. And today we touch on just some of that information that he has. His name is Stan Deo. You can find his work at standeo.com. So I hope you enjoy this show today. Welcome to our show, Stan.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be here, here and there.
Yeah, it's quite a big distance between us, but it's great to be able to do it. You're a man with so much vast experience and knowledge in so many different fields. That leaves us with so many possible topics to cover. But I'd like to just start out by asking you what your thoughts are on the current state of what's going on in the world in terms of natural events and phenomena and weather and earthquakes and volcanoes, etc.
Well, there are a lot of things that appear to be on the increase. The last month has seen a flurry of Richter 6 plus earthquakes around the western and southeastern part of the Arc of Fire, or some call it the Pacific Ring of Fire. These things are not, usually crammed so close together as far as time and events. What has concerned me recently has been the major earthquakes over in the southern island of the Japanese island chain in Kyushu, where the two earthquakes, one of 6.2, another 7, appear to be opening up the split underneath the island, going kind of north-south. The island just above that is already split, has been for some time. The sea runs between the two halves. And the increase in the activity along this fault line goes all the way up to where Fukushima is. Now, when the Richter 6.2 earthquake first hit Kyushu, I did a rough analysis, and believe me, it's rough, using sea surface temperature anomalies in the area to see if there were going to be more large quakes in the area. And I did see not only a signal for a reasonable quake off the coast of Fukushima, but three large in my graphs there, like black neutral temperature zones floating toward the Aleutian Island chain from the Fukushima region. Now, I can only guess that this must be something with water heating, temperature stability puddles, or, bubbles that are perhaps caused by radiation or the heat from radiation there at Fukushima. The earthquake did happen, the one I forecast for Fukushima, but now then it's gone quiet, and the sea surface temperature anomaly is not showing anything last couple of days large in that area, and I don't see anything for the west coast of the United States or for New Zealand. Now, New Zealand, when things start to happen along the Ring of Fire on the southwest and southeast corner, I do think New Zealanders need to kind of, be cautious and have their emergency supplies on hand. Because, as you know, North and South Islands sit on a fault line, but that fault line is also a twisting line. And so it's trying to tear New Zealand apart in two different methods. Watch White Island, the GNS there in Wellington, said that if we see earthquakes and volcanoes in White Island, consider it to be the zipper island for all the earthquake zones and volcanoes down through North Island. So that's what you watch, is White Island activity.
Yeah. Because it's been fairly quiet here in terms of earthquakes. We had, where I live, it's not uncommon at all to feel earthquakes. We had one, I think, a 5.7 that was about 100 miles from us, or maybe a bit more than that, a couple of weeks ago, and I felt it here. But it wasn't strong enough to, want to dive for cover or anything. But that's the first one I've felt for quite a while. And at times, they come fairly regular. So you kind of wonder, when it's quiet, does that mean anything? I don't know. But I noticed that America, along the coastline there, there's not been a lot happening either.
No, it's been very quiet, strangely so. And I think that's not a good sign, because we know that the San Andreas Fault and a lot of the parallel faults to it in that region, plus the Juan de Fuca Plate up on the border between Washington State and Oregon, are all under stress. And we know that the potential quake value up around the Oregon-Washington border is about 9, maybe 9.2 Richter. It's overdue by 56 years for a release, according to the USGS stats on it. So that, when you don't see the pressure-relieving minor quakes, that does worry. And as you rightly observed, those aren't happening there either. So now for you guys, and for us, this region of our countries, where we have a super volcano close by, and you've got like Taupo, and we've got Yellowstone. Now, both of those may be erupting in the next 10, 20 years or less. We haven't seen a lot of data recently from Yellowstone. Apparently, the seismic recorders, the helicorders they call them, went offline for a couple of days. They didn't let us see anything, and I guess it was due to what they claim, updating and maintenance of all the seismic detectors in the Yellowstone area. Your area, gosh, years ago, I had a dream vision before I even knew that Taupo existed, showing that that is going to suddenly get warm. Lake Taupo is going to get very hot and rise before a massive subsidence and eruption of the lake. And that's going to take out a large portion of the North Island. Even the Maori, which we were contacted by later, said that they expect this to happen soon. So
I hope they're wrong.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, obviously that's the one volcano in New Zealand that would do the real damage. I mean, other ones can do damage, but being a super volcano, you know, that would be it. Well, same with Yellowstone, really, isn't it, for America?
Yeah. Well, when Taupo last went, what was it, 86 AD, somewhere around there,
yeah,
I forget.
Something like that, yeah.
The Chinese recorded 3 days of darkness in the Northern Hemisphere from it, so that's mighty.
Yeah, that's right. I think it wasn't the largest recorded, largest volcanic eruption in recorded history. Not that there was anyone here, but...
Yeah, and it's something connected with a scandal. It's going to erupt. The Maori told me when there's a scandal in China, something to do with a lot of logs and, backhanded payments or fraud on the part of some official over there to deal with the dams. And I don't know whether it's the big dam or tributary dams to the one they've got there. But when we see that big scandal, they say, look out for Taupo erupting. So that's one key, I guess, we could use. I don't know whether we trust that or not, but that's what they've seen.
Yeah, well, I hope they're wrong. I mean, it would be curtains for most of us here if that ever happened. But, you know, but with things being this close to the end days, I mean, there's potential this sort of thing all over the world, really, isn't it? I mean,
Oh, yeah.
So we could prepare for earthquakes, and you can prepare for smaller volcanoes, but you couldn't do anything to prepare for something that size.
No, and there have been other Christian folk in the North Island who have written to us over the years since I was there, saying that they've had dream visions of big, you know, like car-sized boulders flying through the air from the eruption there at Taupo. So I guess the Lord is kind of telling people that in the island there that maybe they ought to look at places north of there or in the South Island. I don't know where it would be, but to be prepared for this great disaster. The Taupo eruption is a concern. The GNS didn't have enough materials when we were there, not enough budget. Your government was trying to move Government House 100 feet to the west or east or something, and they were spending money on that. And so when I got on the radio while I was down there in Taupo, it was on the Art Bell show up here, but it went worldwide, I did explain the problem that GNS was having, and I did visit GNS and ask what, you know, why they didn't have sensors in Taupo and various other places. No budget for it. Well, strangely enough, within 6 months, the government relented and gave them a budget enough that they could put, they could lease a German yellow submarine and go down there underneath and check the hot water vents in Taupo.
Yeah.
And put sensors up the way. I know when Holly and I were there, when we first discovered this, I walked along the beach, up at the northern side of Taupo. I forget the name of the motel. It was a Mexican-style motel. And we had steam coming up around our shoes, and the safe in the safe in the hotel, the staff couldn't touch it without hot oven gloves. And so I thought, don't know whether we want to stay here another night, Holly.
Taupo is a beautiful lake. I mean, it's so scenic, you know, and you've got the mountains in the background and everything. It is beautiful. But, yeah, I had a dream once where I was driving past it in a dream and I saw the lake starting to bubble and it was like, oh, no. And then I woke up, thankfully. But I hope these dreams never come to pass, but who knows. And so what do you think's happening with Yellowstone and the other volcanoes in the United States?
They have discovered a second caldera chamber underneath there, a lot more magma than they knew about before under Yellowstone. Whether or not this is going to release until we have massive earthquake activity on the West Coast, I don't know. The fact that the government has told the USGS employees that are monitoring Yellowstone to not make any statements to the press unless it's cleared by the White House tells us they are concerned. But we had a whistleblower from inside the Yellowstone group of people from USGS who were putting in all these new sensors. I think it was about 2 years ago. And they said that at that time, they were taking the feeds from these seismometers, a lot of them that we don't even know about, and shoving them down a high density data line to University of Texas, to a large computer there, for real-time processing of the data to keep an eye on it. And they were bringing in truckloads of equipment and people and made the truck drivers, who were just civilians, sign non-disclosure agreements under penalty of all kinds of stuff if they leaked a word about this. So that does tell me that our government is very concerned about Yellowstone becoming active. Another, I don't know whether you got it in your papers down there, but a couple of years ago, FEMA, the emergency management facility here for the government, bought enough meals to feed 1 million people for maybe a week in the New Madrid area. And people thought, oh, that means New Madrid is going to go down. And I thought about this, and I thought, well, maybe not, because if people are having to flee eastward ahead of the ash cloud coming out of Yellowstone, they'll end up in the New Madrid, you know, Mississippi Valley region. Maybe that's where survivors will go from what happens out west or northwest. Who knows? It's if you were in charge of this, Tony, you know, the keeping the secret on these things, I think that you would probably be a little bit perplexed as to whether to tell the public everything as well.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't know for sure whether your prediction of it going to happen was correct. And if you told people, they would panic and the economy would suffer and blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, I understand that. Because you used to get a lot of information you're not privy to as well now, eh?
That's true.
What do you think? Well, it seems to be that the earthquakes and volcanoes, have increased a lot in the last few years and probably even more as it's going on. Why do you think that is? I know there's some people out there that believe that there's a Planet X approaching and that's what's causing it, but I'm just wondering whether you have any ideas on it.
Well, look, so far I've not been convinced that Planet X is in close enough to do any damage. There is a massive body out there, whether it be a dark star, a companion to our own star, or whether it be like a red dwarf, or whether it be just a large planet, I don't know. But Neptune and Uranus and Pluto all have orbits that are compressed by the presence of this mystery gravitational object in orbit around the sun. Now, I did quite a bit of study on this a few years ago and built mathematical models to predict where stable orbits would be around our sun. And not all of these stable orbits actually have a planet in them. Now, I did find one. Strange enough, I think it was out at, I believe it was 234 times the distance of the Earth from the sun, that the mean orbit out there, believe it or not, was 3,612 years, plus or minus about 10 years or so. Is that what the Mayans were talking about? Is that what Velikovsky was talking about? I just haven't seen the evidence of that. So with or without that, we are seeing changes in the sun. And I think this is a normal progress as a star ages, that it goes through these stages where it's burned off, in this case, over half of its hydrogen fuel supply, and it's now fixing to go to a helium-helium reaction. And when that happens, I fully expect the sun to throw off a lot of debris as it changes the chemistry, nuclear chemistry, and that the planets will probably get hit with a wave of several waves of this like hot dust coming off of the surface of the sun as it passes through this next stage. I do not believe that our star is like billions of years old, nor is the universe 14 billion years old. There's recent papers have been published showing that the age of the universe, the way we calculate it, is all up to shoot. The speed of light has been assumed to be a constant in Einstein's work and everybody else after him that got into the cosmological modeling business. And there is a problem with that. The speed of light, which is electromagnetic radiation, was much higher, like 10 to the 60th power, like 10 with 60 zeros after it, faster than it is now when we were in the initial stages of the formation of the universe. Now, that means that all of our radiometric dating of the age of the universe and rocks and stars and whatever has to be modified by a what's called an exponential curve in the decreasing speed of light from the Big Bang till now. When you do that, it brings us more into line with the biblical age of the Earth, and it allows us to see what caused the flood. And it was in recent times, the Garden of Eden was there, and Atlantis was there, and the Great Flood occurred. These are in the last, maybe 6 to 8, 9, 10,000 years. So that these discoveries, when watching the sun and the changes in it, and hence the changes in the planets, have allowed us to probe into areas that have not been made public or not been of interest before. So not only are we seeing climate change on Earth and on the sun, which is a direct driver of our system, we're seeing it on a lot of the other planets. They're heating up. There's activity at their polar regions, electric fields and vortices, all kinds of stuff telling us the whole darn solar system is in change.
I don't get it how I do understand there's an agenda behind it, but how they're telling us that man has created all the climate change when they seem to be ignoring those other facets, like you're saying, what's happening elsewhere in the solar system. And right. Man can't be responsible for that. So it tells you that there's something else that's going on.
Well, look, I look at the prophecies in the Bible, in the book of Revelation and Isaiah and Ezekiel and various others, and I see that the sun is going to play a major part in the judgments that are going to come on the earth, burning up a third of the green grass and trees and killing fish life and making it so hot for several weeks that people have to hide in caves or under rocks and stuff to keep from being burned by the energy of the sun. When I was down in Australia, when I lived down in Perth, the hole in the ozone layer passed over Perth, and it was there for several weeks, maybe a month or two. And it was so bad that there were public service announcements coming out saying, if you're going to go outside, especially the housewives, and hang out white sheets and linens on the line, wear sunglasses to protect your eyes from the increased ultraviolet radiation. And then, of course, driving down the freeways, even though you were in your car with your sunglasses, your eyes would start to weep from the pain of the ultraviolet light. And you could feel it going through your jeans even. You could feel like pinpricks all over your arms and legs are exposed to direct sunlight because of the radiation getting through the atmosphere. And that is going to be on a much grander scale as Earth's magnetic field weakens during the coming magnetic pole reversal.
So why do you think that we're going to have a magnetic pole reversal?
Well, portions of it have already become evident with the North Pole drifting rapidly, twice as fast as the South Pole from its normally stable position. The sun, every 11 years, goes through one half of what's called the Hale magnetic cycle, where the north pole of the sun flips and becomes a south pole, and the south pole flips and becomes a north pole. Well, in this last sunspot cycle, number 24, we saw that the scientific community was somewhat puzzled by the fact that the north and south pole of the sun did not reverse together. The north pole flipped and became a south pole, and it hung around like that for a couple of weeks, and we had two south poles on the sun. Now, how is that possible? Well, they started modeling, and they saw, well, the north pole of the sun has a north-south pole already there in a vortex inside of it, and so does the south pole. So the vortices are not linked together exactly, and you can have the changes of these poles. Well, then I went to NASA and looked at the computer modeling they've been doing of our own magnetic field here on Earth, and what would happen when, not if, but when, the north and south pole decided to flip-flop as it's done in the past. And their model showed that we would have three north-south poles floating around inside the magma of our planet during that change, which meant that there were going to be anomalous holes in the ozone layer and in the electromagnetic shield that protects us from galactic radiation that is harmful and from solar radiation that is harmful, especially in the UVB and C bands. Now, if that happens, it's going to be, like in the Bible, men will hide from, you know, the face of the Almighty, and they'll hide from what God is doing with the sun, because it will burn us. And that's, you know, he's using the sun to do a lot of, you know, the punishment.
I know you have some interesting information and theories on what caused the great flood of Noah's day and sank Atlantis, etc. Can you give us a little bit of that info?
Sure, Tony. Back in 2014, I don't know whether you saw the video, but I gave a lecture here to a prophecy conference in Colorado Springs. And at that time, I'd been privileged to find the Garden of Eden and to prove its location following the book of Genesis. And it was located and is located still in the Ngorongoro crater in northern Tanzania. I thought, well, that's, you know, the biggest thing I'd ever hoped to find in my life. And I'm just so privileged that the Lord led me to that. Well, I've been asked to do a couple lectures now at the same place in July this year. So I started researching earlier this year, what would I talk about? And I thought, well, I'll revisit an update on the Garden of Eden, and that'll be part of it. And as I was poking around in there, I found my notes that I had written for my book, The Vindicator Scrolls, in 1989 about Atlantis. And I thought, well, I've got the internet, I've got Google Earth, I've got all kinds of other resources now that I didn't have then. Let me see if I can find Atlantis. And lo and behold, I found not only Atlantis, but what caused it to sink on once, well, all over, and then part of it to rise back up. What caused the flood of Noah also caused, that same flood caused the destruction of Atlantis. God was getting rid of all the hybrid beings, you know, from the angelic crossbreeding. Well, what caused it? It was a meteor impact. And when I did the 2014 lecture on the Garden of Eden, I described a meteor impact that I thought had caused India to break apart from North Africa and shove up into the Himalayas. And I thought it was what's called the Chicxulub meteor that impacted in the Gulf of Mexico, you know, here in the between the United States and South America. Well, when I was reviewing that a couple months back, I thought, no, you're wrong here. That couldn't have caused it, because the west coast of Africa is all bowed out, like, you know, convex. And if that meteor had done it, it should have made it concave and shoved it in. So I started looking for another meteor impact, and I found the largest recorded, well, it will soon be recorded, meteor impact crater in the history of man on the east coast of India. For the last 10 or 12 years or so, there have been scientists over there trying to figure out whether this, what they call the Kudapa Basin, C-U-D-D-A-P-A-H, whether the basin was the rim of a meteor impact, or whether it was just a surface subsidence that sank the area. So I looked at that, and you can look at it too, and you will see a 300-mile crater, the rim of it being on the eastern side of India. And when you calculate the meteor energy, it is 22 times the energy of the Chicxulub meteor that formed in the Gulf, that hit the Gulf of Mexico. Now, what was really cool about this meteor impact was that when India was stretched down along and connected to North Africa, or to Africa and Madagascar and to Saudi Arabia, when they were all together and this thing hit, it hit on the east coast of India where it was then, not where it is now. And the top part of India, the surface part, got separated from what's called its craton, its foot, you know, support down into the surface of the mantle of the earth, because the meteor was a shallow one, and had tunneled under India with such force that it picked up India and the surface part of it, shoved it up and into the what became the Himalayan mountains. It just pushed India up there and collapsed it. But it left a hole in the Indian Ocean underneath where India used to live, and that hole is about 100 miles north of Diego Garcia, the U.S. base there. And that hole was a remnant of this thing tunneling underneath not only India, but Saudi Arabia, the Mediterranean, Europe, and up underneath the Atlantic Ocean. And there today is a mystery bulge that's now solved because of this meteor. The bulge is in the North Atlantic, 2.3 million square miles in area. And it knocked the Earth off its upright axis by 23.5 degrees with that impact. All of this was the thing that caused the flood. It heated the waters from the energy of the impact. The heat that was generated vaporized lots of water. They went up into the upper atmosphere, immediately cooled and became rain for 40 days and nights, and broke up the subterranean shell of the, what's called the Moho discontinuity today, which is a shell of water that's very salty underneath the earth at about 5 to 15 miles depth. And that was broken up, and hot water from that spewed up into the oceans, causing the flood we're talking about. So, yeah, it's, you know, that meteor is what God aimed at, not only, you know, destroying Atlantis and all those people, kind of rearranging things for us.
Yeah, so we could end up in with the Book of Revelation sort of stuff with something similar again, maybe not quite as big as that. But
well, it does say wormwood's going to fall.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a whole lot of other meteor showers and all sorts of other things. And something like a big mountain being thrown into the sea.
It says a burning mountain, and I wonder if that's going to be Taupo. That's a volcanic mountain.
Ah, oh.
That's what the ancients used to call volcanoes, was burning mountains.
Right. Oh, yeah, okay. I'd never thought of it along those lines. But, yeah, maybe it is. I don't know. It's all a bit scary on that sort of thing. Because we can't really prepare for anything that kind of size. I do believe we need to be preparing for what's coming, but, you know, that's kind of magnitude of something is way beyond the ability to be prepared.
I know.
Yeah. So, Brooke, who's part of our Minute to Midnight team here, said she'd kill me if I didn't ask you. We've heard you talk about the relationship between Solomon and what is the potential Antichrist that's coming. So Brooke said, well, why does Stan think the Antichrist is going to have a name like Solomon or be associated with Solomon? So I said, yep, I'll ask him. So
well, that's okay. I'll answer that. It's a very good question, very strong question. In Revelation 13:18, it says, here in this place is wisdom.
Yep.
Let him that has understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Well, the only man in the Bible, using the Bible to help translate what was written there in the Revelation, was King Solomon, and that was the amount of gold he received, 666 talents.
Yeah, you can find that in 1 Kings 10:14 and 2 Chronicles 9:13 is the references to that, if anyone's interested.
Excellent, good. Now, okay, I looked at that and I thought, why are they saying here is wisdom? Okay, is it about the numbering system? It might be, but, you know, what is it? And then I saw that was related to King Solomon, so I went back and I read, you know, about King Solomon again several times. He was very wise. He was a very wise king, but he also went very bad until the very last days of his life. He went after the false gods of his many wives. Now, legends in the Middle East talk about King Solomon and the mysteries, you know, the Arabian Nights, you know, the flying carpets, that King Solomon had the ring that controlled the genies, you know, the jinn. That was occultism. And there is a point in there where before he went bad, Solomon had finished building the temple to God, and he stood there to dedicate it before the men of Israel and caused fire to come down from the heavens to consume the offering that he had set up to christen or inaugurate the temple to God. Okay, now the fact that he said it he was going to cause fire to come down from the heavens in sight of the men of Israel is important, because the Antichrist is going to cause fire to come down in the sight of man. In other words, mankind, not just Israel. He is going to be a false type of Solomon. He's going to be wise. He's going to offer solutions that will make the people of the earth who don't know better clap and applaud him ruling the planet, because he will bring peace, allegedly. Now, when Solomon of the Israelis, when he was born, his name was given to him by the prophet Nathan, and it was called Jedediah in Hebrew. Now, David's wife Bathsheba used to be married, before he was killed by David, to Uriah the Hittite. Now, the Hittites were probably 200 or 300 years after the first major, like, organizing king of that whole Iranian-Iraqi region did his deed and unified all these countries. He became a very famous king to the Hittites and the civilizations that followed. And his name, this king's name, was Shalmaneser the Great, or Shalmaneser the First. Now, listen to what I'm saying. Shalmaneser. In their language, Shalman is Salman. Shalman the Great, or Shalman the God King. And he was the one that built, what's the city next to where the Tigris was? Slips my mind. But anyway, he was such a great king, he built a temple up in northern Syria, and the remains of it are still there. And what you see when you analyze the remains is that it is built with the exact dimensions and layout that King Solomon used to build the temple of God. Now, his mother Bathsheba wanted to call her son like a great king, but not exactly copying Shalman or Shalmaneser. So in Hebrew, Solomon's name is Shloma, which was more of a peaceful, great name. And the deeds of Shloma, Solomon of Israel, have been mixed in history in the minds of people with the deeds of Shalman and the Shalmaneser of the, the Assyrian Empire. Now, this tells us that the Antichrist of this age is going to impersonate the King Solomon and King Shalman, both. He's going to bring fire down. He's going to be a very wise king like the Solomon of Israel. But he's also going to have the magical deeds and stuff that Shalmaneser the First was purported to have. The Arabic nations revere Shalman, and Solomon is the English version of that as well. So this is telling us that we need to look for an Antichrist from the Arab nations that is named Solomon in some form. And in the Middle East, Solomon, Shalman, Salman are very prevalent. They're names that are all over the place. And of particular interest is the Salman who is Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the second in line for the throne of Saudi Arabia. He is gaining power now like you would not believe across the Middle East. He has bought up a lot of the water supplies of the United States to take it back to Saudi Arabia. He is changing the laws over there so that women can have driver's licenses and all kinds of stuff. He has been voted the most popular leader in the Middle East by the young people of the Arab nations around there. He has formed a 39-nation coalition or union of Arabic nations. Now, he doesn't, look like an Antichrist. He looks like a real hero, and he's gaining power. Now, if he is to become the prince of the covenant between Israel and the many nations, then Prince Solomon will not take the throne. He's not in line number one. He's the second in line. But his cousin, Prince Nayef, Mohammed bin Nayef, will take over the throne of King Solomon when he dies or steps down, which will be fairly soon. He's quite ill. Now, it might be that young Prince Solomon will let his cousin take over running Saudi Arabia, but that Prince Solomon will eventually take over running the entire world, and hence he'll tell his nephew how to run Saudi Arabia as well as the other places. The Arabians, particularly young bin Salman, have been experimenting with a cashless numbering system for their banking system to keep people from being involved in crime and in illegal use of money. Again, this kind of leads the pathway to a total global system of numbering where you don't have to have cash and you just have to have this ID number on your body. All these things are starting to point to this young fella as being the new Solomon.
I have a couple of questions there, though. Like, would the Jews who are looking for a Messiah, would they accept anybody that's a name like Muhammad and has a Muslim or Islamic sort of background? I find it hard to see how they would accept somebody as their Messiah that's like...
Well, strangely enough, things are happening in Israel you wouldn't expect. They are building smart cities, which are being run with cashless systems without money already in Israel, and are finding them quite successful. If Muhammad bin Salman says to Israel, you can build the temple to Solomon in the north part of the Temple Mount, we'll let you do that and worship there, which has been discussed already in Turkey, you know, helping the Jews do that, then he will gain favor to a degree with them because he's let them rebuild their temple and to reinstitute, you know, temple sacrifices and worship. It may also be that Israel will accept him, because if they don't, it will be too hard, because he's gained so much power across all the Arabic nations in the region already that to disagree with him might mean the destruction of Israel. So that it might be an unhappy relationship, but I think they will accept that because the alternative is death.
Okay. Well, they're still looking for their Messiah, though. I see that some sort of Jesus type, you know, almost figure that needs to come along.
Well, you all right. Now that brings up a good point. In Saudi Arabia, one man has been put in prison already, and I think another one's died for releasing information they found on the Saudi family of the Solomons and the Saud dynasty, came from a Jewish merchant in ancient Iraq, and we think he was from the tribe of Dan. Now, if that's the case and he plays that card, then people in the Jewish nation, you know, in Israel, will think, ah, he's one of us that kind of went weird, and maybe we can make a deal with him.
Do you think the Illuminati has any play in what's going on here? You know, because it seems we're moving towards a one-world government, whether it comes under, you know, the Saudis and bin Salman, or whether it's somebody else, I don't know. But you can see everywhere there's a move towards a one-world government and one-world religion, etc.
Yes, I do see that they're a big part of this. But the Illuminists are primarily Western people. What the new Antichrist will do is he will destroy the Illuminati, and he will be cheered for this by people who don't know better. He's going to get rid of the people that set up the groundwork for him to make this global government. He knows, like many other conquerors in the past, that when you get traitors from a nation you're trying to conquer who will come and inform on their fellow countrymen, when you have finally taken over their country, you'll kill those traitors because you couldn't trust them to be loyal to you either.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen to the Illuminati. As I say, people are going to be, you know, relieved and happy that are aware of this Illuminist business, and will sadly turn to one that's even worse.
Yeah, well, that's right. I can see that regardless of who it is, because Lucifer or Satan has no loyalty, and so therefore his followers aren't going to really have loyalty either. And if it suits the greater cause to sacrifice the lesser ones, then they will. And
yes.
And people would cheer if the whole, you know, the banking system collapses and they string up the bankers, etc. I mean, there'd be a lot of people that'd be happy and probably think the person that organized that is the greatest thing since sliced bread. So I can see that.
Tony, here's the thing that I haven't quite, you know, put into a hard mold yet, but the Club of Rome in Italy back in 1972 or 8, somewhere in there, wrote a paper on setting up a planetary model with 10 regions in it, 10 nation states of the entire world. And they used computers to determine financial, ethnic, cultural, military, all kinds of things, resource sharing, to see which countries could go into this region and that region, whatever. So it was called the Adaptive Global Model for Regionalization of the Planet. Now, in Italy, the Club of Rome is very closely allied now then to the new Pope and the Vatican. So how is the Vatican and the Club of Rome, how are they going to interface to an Arabic Antichrist? The Antichrist is going to have a false prophet. Is it going to be the Vatican declaring his greatness and whatever? Is the Vatican going to make an image to him after he does these great things that people, you know, hail? I don't know.
There are so many questions, and everybody out there, I mean, I get bombarded with everyone's different ideas about who the Antichrist is. I mean, we get all sorts, and everyone's theories are really, you know, good, but then there's also holes in them, so I don't know if that we'll know for sure until the time actually happens, till the Antichrist is revealed. But we can certainly see the system being put into place. And I've just got kind of one thought that one of my friends mentioned to me. It's like, you know, we hear people with testimonies of all sorts of stuff that, you know, this is genuine and that's genuine, and we're left to have to go, well, who, you know, how do we know that their testimony or their, I'm not talking Christian testimony, I'm talking people, you know, saying that they were part of this organization or they've got that inside information or whatever. How do we trust them? How do we know what's disinformation and what's truth? Do you have any kind of ideas on how to go about discerning that?
Well, for as far as the Antichrist and the New World Order to come under him are concerned, it will be obvious when a new global order does form. There's no question about that. If we are not looking for who runs that order, if we're not testing this guy or that guy and his actions, if we're not doing that, we'll be totally asleep and miss the whole thing. So the fact that we have differing opinions about who is the Antichrist, who might be, who's the false prophet, this is good because it's encouraging healthy debate and study so that we're proved worthy by being good students. Now, think about this too. The New World Order, whoever's running it, is going to favor beheading people. And the leader in the world, the leading country and culture doing that is Saudi Arabia. They behead people.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I think that'll probably be pretty much of what we need to talk about as far as today. We can do discussions of Atlantis in depth later if we want to and look at pictures of it.
Well, Stan, that's been an awesome conversation. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm absolutely sure our listeners will be riveted to this show. And it'll be great to have you back again sometime soon. So thanks heaps for coming on today.
You bet, Tony. Good talking to you. Lord bless you now.
Bless you too. Thank you. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that show. I certainly enjoyed interviewing Stan. He's such a wealth of knowledge and he presents it in such a great manner. Don't forget you can find Stan's work at standeo.com. Also, remember minutetomidnight.com. We post all our YouTube videos and audio on there, as well as numerous articles getting posted there all the time on different topics by different writers within our team. And we also have a Facebook group if anyone wants to join that. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. And don't forget too that I write, record, and play all of the music for all of our shows. And if you can support rockshoresounds.com if you need production music or sound effects, anytime you support rockshoresounds.com, you are directly helping to support aminutetomidnight.com. Also, we have a donate button on the website if anyone feels that they'd like to help us out so that we can keep these interviews and videos coming. So that's it for us for today, and we will hopefully catch you in the next A Minute to Midnight show.